Yeah, but a couple of weeks ago, I just thought, you know, oh, well, you know, we did our very best, and, you know, we might, you know, Matt might get a nomination, or someone else might, and that'll be that, and we, you know, it'll be fine, we did a good movie.
Then it
started to pick up again, I guess. You know, it's one of those films that, you know, the releasing of it sort of mirrored what we did, you know, in making it, sort of broke a lot of rules, not setting out to break a lot of rules.
Right.
We didn't say, ooh, let's go break a bunch of rules, but...
Uh-huh.
But it just sort of worked out that way, and as we were writing it and directing it and shooting it and stuff, it was just like, it just wasn't falling together like a normal studio, or a normal independent picture even, everything was just ass backwards. And then when the release, you know, it came out and the wrong time of year, everyone said, and no one will remember us, and if they do, they might remember, like LA did with Charlie Kaufman last year, the mm-hmm. Falcon, will remember Charlie and stuff.
Right.
People are surprising us, and that's lovely. It's just actually, what's really cool is not just that. What I was really heartened by, especially with, you know, the DGA and PGA nominations, because, you know, you have to narrow it down to just a few.
Yeah.
And you look at those pictures, and they're all passion pictures. They're all things that, you know, that the directors, the writers, really, you know, felt strongly about. The actors, they they're all pictures that people would have said, yes, well, you know, it's lovely, but it's a small picture, like George's picture, or like a Capote, and things like this. And they dismissed them. They might get an acting something. And then to see those pictures come back, that was wonderful for me.
Yeah.
I really like that.
It's really lovely it's kind of sad in a way that for the last few years it's been pretty widely acknowledged that the major studios are pretty much out of the game of making films that will be thought of as award worthy towards the end of the year, and the dependents and the independents it's their game entirely, just out with every now obviously and Titanic 9-8, but the game.
It is lovely to see that I think what's happening is studios are starting. I mean, it's always so slow going in this area, but the studios are starting to look at these pictures and say, not only are they getting the awards, they're making money. And so I think you'll start to see more and more of the mainstream studios will be doing more of this affair, because they're starting to say, listen, we don't really quite understand it. You know, it's like, you know, with George's movie, you know, we don't understand it, but you know, I think it's going to make money. Probably because we don't understand it. Because it just, again, it's the pictures are breaking all the rules. No one, if you sat down with a writing teacher and a directing teacher and whoever these professors were and talked about Good Night, Good Luck, they talk about, oh, it's, you know, it's too inside, it's too, you know, they didn't open it up, they made all these classic mistakes. All nonsense. That's what gave it its the suspense and all that. It's just and then you talk about the, you know, sort of biopics. Who the hell wants to see a biopic of Truman Capote? You know, and you go, wow, that's one of the best biopics I've ever seen, because it not just talks about, it doesn't just talk about Capote and him, but it talks about, you know, writers and artists and who we are and how what the, sort of the nature of that beast is, and how you have to sort of sell yourself out in order to create art, and destroy yourself in order to create, and how we justify that. That's wonderful stuff.
Mm. It's interesting that, you know, even though you initially wrote Crash, the impetus for your writing Crash was rage, as I remember. The story is that you got ripped off, or someone tried to steal your money.
Yeah, they stole my car. The two guys took him up. Yeah, exactly. The scene that's in the movie is my scene.
Yeah.
And we went home and changed the locks at 2 o'clock in the morning.
The scene with Sandy Bullock and
Fraser.
Right.
Yeah, that's what happened to us.
And
I just was curious because it was, you know, over 10 years using those guys, and every year, and it just sort of anger turned into curiosity. And
And yet, it's interesting. Every movie that seems to connect with not just the Academy, but also obviously with audiences, because Crash, before it went to DVD, made it up to, what, the mid-50 million range?
No, domestic, it's made a lot of money, apparently, overseas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it's made, because, of course, you know, they carefully guard those secrets so they don't have to pay us anything, but it's... I mean, I looked early on and said, well, you know, if we made 11 $12 million. If we made like $18 million, we looked at a lot of the films that I really respected in the last few years, and the films that come out that were these just like Magnolia, and then the films group pictures, and that I loved. And said, what do they make? Well, they all made 11, 12, 15, Morris Paris, 17 or something, 18. Wow, if we could make that, that'd be great. And then when it just kept going and going,
it'd be
good.
Maybe the 20s or the mid-20s. So I thought, well, if it just makes 20, 25, that'll be really pretty good.
It'd be great. I would have been thrilled.
Yeah.
And everyone was sort of disappointed in opening weekend because they were all shooting for like a huge opening. And
yeah.
It opened really well. It opened like 9.5 million or something. They were out there where they really went, or I forget what it was, but they were all shooting for over 10. And I disappointed them. But just, it wouldn't stop. It just, word of mouth really determined.
When I had Bobby Maresco come by the UCLA class that he moderated last spring, something told me that the movie was happening because it was predominantly people in their 50s and 60s, and they all talked about it the next week after we showed it and how much they liked Bobby and how much particularly they liked the film. And I think that the key thing here is that all films that connect say something very simple and fundamental that people agree with and go, yes, that's true. And what this movie basically says is that we all have our rather ugly or scowling or intemperate sides, but we also have angels on our shoulders too. And pretty much every character in this film, not to boil it down to too simplistic a formula, but pretty much, sides.
We all live in glass houses. I mean, we just tell the same stories in the Bible over and over again, I guess. It's just things beaten into me by nuns early on. But it's like, you have to look at these things, and it's in order for me to get as old as I've gotten here, which is middle age, I suppose. You have to realize that you're really a flawed individual, and that every time you think for everything that you think you've done well in your life, you've also done something really shitty to somebody, without meaning it sometimes, or sometimes meaning it, the smallness and pettiness of who we are.
Yeah.
And so if you embrace the concept that the heroes are villains and villains are heroes, it's just depending on what time of day you get to them. And then, there are people certainly who do villainous, horrible, horrible things in this world, and no one tries to excuse them. I didn't try to excuse them in Crash. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't look at them as human beings. And the same thing with their heroes. They have to look at those and say, those are people that on another day may have not left into that car.
Well, for whatever reason, because of the way producers want their movies made, but very few movies, Paul, make that point that you just made and which your film makes. And I think that's one of the things that makes it stand out, perhaps the thing that makes it stand out with people.
Well, I think it's why people are identifying with it, because you see ourselves in those things. We know, we love the escapism of the popcorn movies where you see the hero who just, won't stop and is all good. And he's flawed, meaning, he's mean to a dog or something.
Right. Yeah.
He's not like really flawed. Yeah. And the villain might have a little good in him, but not very much. But to play with it, I think we all identify that that's not us. I mean, we love to escape, but who we are in our daily lives, we're different beasts. We're humans. And was it Walt Whitman's quote? If I contradict myself, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. It's who we are. We're all large human beings, and we're all large as people, and we contain these contradictions.
Something of a medical emergency in the middle of the making of this film.
Yeah, too much is being made of that. I had a heart attack. But I don't want to start to get people's sympathy vote.
So it wasn't a heart attack, but a heart murmur, or what was it?
No, it was still a heart attack. Okay. They hospitalized me, and it was in the middle of shooting. I was walking away from the set, and I started clutching my chest, and the producer suggested I go to the hospital and check it out. So I did, and they said, "Oh, sit down, you've had a heart attack." And so they took me to ICU, and I told them that they could stop, they could shoot one more day, because it was the next day's shooting was only just the one ending shot with the helicopter, and that I blocked it out.
Yeah.
They could shoot that day while I was in intensive care if they brought the video tap from the shoot directly to the hospital into intensive care. And so they smuggled it into ICU and put it in my chest because I couldn't move. I had a rather animated conversation with my producer, who I thought had done the shot. Of course, I don't get to that and couldn't really see. But they were shut down for 2 weeks, and then they said they were going to have to replace me as director, because then the producer or the doctor wouldn't let me go back, because it was going to be too much stress on my heart. And so I met with him, and I said, I totally understand that, you know. It'll be very stressful directing. So how much stress do you think it'll be for me to be sitting at home saying, well, another the director finishes my fucking film? Okay, get the point. So he let me go back, and there was a nurse on the set, and took my blood pressure every half hour. And again, of course, I milked this like endlessly. You know, Sandy Bullock and everyone were really nice to me, bringing me green tea and telling, don't get upset, Paul. Do whatever you want. It was lovely.
All right.
So if you have sort of a heart attack, it was the best kind to have.
How, what was it, about midway or near the end? Or
right, where? Midway. And okay. So we shut down for 2 weeks. Right. And I was already shut down once because of some illness. I was not myself and in the cast. And then we had shut down over Christmas. Then we had this show for 2 weeks. And then because of that, we lost Don Cheadle because he had to go to Rwanda right after. We were tightly booked. And
right.
So then we had to shut down. We shot for another week and then shut down to wait for him to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, another 2 months later, we came
right.
up and we finished the film.
Yep.
So it was spread over, I think, 5 months, this film.
We all make predictions in this town. I do it all the time. But, you know, there's a very strong expectation that the film that you wrote for Clint that's going to be out around this time, well, not obviously, more like, November, December next year, which is called Flags of Our Fathers. It seems like that kind of film that people are going to be paying attention to again as a year end.
Well, I think people are always pay attention to anything Clint Eastwood does because
yeah.
the man's a genius.
Yeah.
So it probably has very little to do with my film, with my screenplay, but hopefully it'll support his work. He's just a terrific guy to work with. You know, I
Flags of Ours. It seemed to, you know, cinematic.
Oh, first of all, I had to figure out why to do a war story at a time of war, and what I wanted to say, and that, you know, and what I wanted to say, and how I could be true to the men and their story, and this is a story about, you know, six men who everyone thinks they knew. This is those people that raised that flag in Iwo Jima. We always just thought it was heroes, and
right.
what really happened to them, and how that image, you know, really had an impact on their life, some for good, some for ill, but how being labeled a hero could destroy a man. And so when I finally figured that out after like
right.
4 months, I sat down to write it, and I didn't tell Stephen or Clint what I was going to write. I just wrote the thing, and they were very trusting, and I turned in my first draft, and they said, good, gave me a couple notes, and
that's the Clint signature, isn't it?
He likes
the
screenplay. Really is. Just, you know, that's why people love him. The actors love him because he just trusts them, you know.
Yeah.
And he don't let him down because I know he's going to do that to me, and I'm not going to let him down. This is the script. Is it? It better be my best. Better work. I turn it over because you don't want to disappoint him.
And you've got a film that you're going to direct next. At least the one I knew about was called Honeymoon with Harry. How's that coming along?
Well, I've got a couple things I'm playing with. I'm not sure if Honeymoon's going to be the next.
Okay.
I've got one actually that I'm writing. I'm hoping Clint will star in for me for Warner Brothers called magazine article called Death and Dishonor that Mark Boll wrote. Really tragic story about four men returning from the Iraq War and one who goes missing and his father goes looking for him. And so I'm writing it right now. I'm on page 53. If I get that darn thing done, that might be the next one, so we're not sure.
And Death and Dishonor is at Book Soup right now, right? It's purchasable? The book?
No, it's a...
Oh, it's not based on something, sorry.
It's based on a magazine article, a Playboy magazine article that
right.
he just brought me.
I thought maybe...
Mark Boll did a lovely job of researching this terrible story. It's
okay.
an awful story that happened to these men. And so I optioned it, and Warner
right.
Brothers is championing that.
Where can I find the magazine article?
Magazine article, Playboy magazine.
Playboy, okay.
And I'm not sure what I'm going to call it yet, but
right.
It's really missed. It talks about, it asks questions that I really want to ask, and that's most the thing that I look for in a film is something that you don't have the answers to, something you're fishing along with the audience.
You know, when I saw Gunner Palace, and there's a couple other docs about troops over there in Iraq, and I was kind of wondering, isn't it something that could be conceivably done that I really liked. I mean, after Jarhead came out, I was saying to people, you know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see a live movie, something that's happening right now about Iraq. Now, I don't want to see about Gulf War 91. I'd like to see something about right now. Why not the immediacy of right now?
Yeah.
What's your view about that? About,
I mean, that's what I loved in the Stephen Bochco's series Over There, which didn't make it for some reason. I don't know, but I loved it. I was really, I watched the first three episodes before I went off to Europe, and I was on FX. So really, it really made you feel like you were trying to.
Hey, by the way, you've also written the Americanized version of a really excellent, in my view, Italian film, which is called The Last Kiss.
Isn't yes. That was a lovely little film. I really enjoyed that.
Gabriel, I've forgotten his name. Is it Macchino?
Macchino?
Yeah.
Gabriel Macchino.
Really nice guy. I met him at Sundance.
I met him here in town, too. Lovely writer and director. He's actually doing a new film with Will Smith right now.
And what's that called?
I've forgotten.
Okay. Here or over there?
It was a drama about a man who, a homeless man, and how he raised his son. It was a fascinating story.
Hmm.
So, I liked doing that. I wrote that actually several years ago, before Million Dollar Baby or Crash was made, Rough Lakeshore. And I just basically translated it. It was really.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for your time. And again, my sincere congratulations to
you
and the whole Crash team. So, it's really great news for you guys. And I hope the things keep going the way they have been going for you.
Well, if it just stops right here, I'm just totally fine. Because, we all got the chance to work on something that I'm really proud of. And that's all we need.